I hope we are moved by our speaker. And I started to say, Herb, I'm glad you didn't sing that before you ask everyone to move. We appreciate your attendance. We appreciate you coming up here. And it is a special pleasure for me to introduce our speaker. Dub Hill and his wife Shirley started coming here, I think, in about 2004, making presentations to the missions committee, which Carolyn was a member. And we have gotten to know them and love them as if we had known them all of our lives. Dub works under the oversight of the Tupelo, Mississippi Main Street, West Main Street Church of Christ. He's been working in a Russian effort since 2002, and it's the Skipkar Bible School as well as the Social Assistance, Russian Social Assistance Program, where they go into the area and find members of the church who are willing to bring orphans in and train them in the Word of God and bring them up the way that God would have us to do. And this is such a wonderful work. We have been privileged to be a part of this here in your missions work since, I believe, 2004 or thereabouts. And this is the first time that we've had the opportunity for him to make a presentation, I think, to the whole congregation. So please join me in giving Dub and Shirley a great welcome. Please meet them afterwards if you haven't met them. But let's listen attentively as Dub gives us his presentation.
Of all subjects, we were talking about it, growing older and forgetting things, and I forgot the clicker. I think everybody needs to take note of where you're sitting, because the singing was absolutely beautiful. So this has become your permanent place. Well done, sir. I appreciate your songs very much. As Roy said, it's been a privilege to be a part of the work with you. It is it's a long way from Maryville, Tennessee to Syktyvkar, Russia. And it's been a joy for me to be a part of that. I got started with the school actually in 1993. And since then, it's been going and meeting and working with the school. And then in 1999, Shirley and I went and talked to the brethren in Syktyvkar, the church there, about the work with widows and orphans at that time. And it came to be very quickly in the spring of 2000, we had our first two widows that moved into our homes, and one destitute young lady with two boys. All three had been terribly abused by her husband, and she was finally able to get away from him and met one of our ladies at church, and she brought her to the church and to our homes. And she lived with us about a year and a half and finally moved south to be with her mother and father. But while she was there, she became a Christian. And that is one of the hallmarks of the whole work, is the scriptures we read earlier, Matthew 28, 19 and 20. Go, teach, baptize, and teach. And I'll show you another slide or two. Primarily, the one that we ride, or the vehicle we ride to do this, is James 1:27. Take care of the widows and the orphans. And by doing that, we have ample opportunities to talk to them about the truth. If you do something good and nice for people, which is the character of Jesus our Savior, he was kind and he did nice things for people. And as a result, he had opportunities to teach. And we have had that same result as we've been kind and nice to people. Eventually they will say, why are you doing this? And that just opens the door. And we go from there. And we'll talk some more about some of the things that have happened. If I could go back and start all over again, the only thing I would change would be my Russian. I have very little Russian. If I can talk to someone in one-word sentences, I'm fine. If they can comprehend my one words, then we can converse. If I've got a Russian-English dictionary, that always helps. But if I could go back and do that, I certainly would. If you study language very in any depth at all, you'll wind up in Genesis, of all places, Noah. And after the flood, Genesis chapter 9, verse 1, God told Noah and his family to go and replenish the earth. Then 100 years later, chapter 11, verse 1, all these people show up in the area that some scholars believe is where Babylon is or was. And they start building this tower. They're going to reach to heaven so they won't be affected by flood and disasters again. And they keep talking in terms, if you read chapter 11, us and we and mine and ours, and not one mention of God, not one mention of him being a part of this effort. So he says, let's just go down there and see about this. So the terminology is foreign to us, I know, but that's what happened. And instead of going down there and opening the earth and swallowing all these arrogant leaders of the people and killing them, he says, let's just change the way they understand each other. And to give you some idea of that, let's just assume that we're all working Friday afternoon in the brickyard, which is what they were doing. Monday morning, we come back to work, and this is when it all starts. We show up before the where the leader gives us our instructions for the day, and he says, Strasvitcha. And we just stand there. That means hello. And nobody says anything, and he says, Доброе утро. This is good morning. And he says, Как дела? That's how are you? And we still don't know what he's talking about. If there's not a translator there, we're at a loss. We don't know what to do. And that is exactly how God separated the people. He changed the way they understood each other. It's quite simple. Just change the way they speak. Today, after the Noah's clans, the Noah's sons' clans separated, Japheth went to Europe, toward Europe, Ham went south, and Shem settled in the east. And just for your trivia lesson tonight, that language that one they all spoke in chapter 11, verse 1, was, they think, was Hebrew. And Shem kept that language when he settled in the east. And that's where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the descendants from that generation of people all the way down to Jesus. So they're pretty confident that language that Shem took with him was the Hebrew language. Today there's 6,500 languages spoken in the world. Obviously Russia's one and English is another. And it's very, very difficult without translators to converse with them. As we get to the very last slide this evening, I want you to come back to these thoughts, and then we'll talk about that last slide in a way that maybe it'll help you understand what the people there had to go through. As we start this evening, I always try to give you a map, and we've got a couple of them tonight that kind of help us better understand Russia, the size of it. It is just, even today, after all these satellite... I can't see. I'm going to come down here. Sorry, Shirley. After all of these countries, after the communism and fell, all of these countries became independent states. They just pulled off and became their own nation. And I think most recently we're more familiar with Ukraine and the activities that's going on between Russia and Ukraine. So, but that's the size of Russia today. Siberia in the east, separated by the Ural Mountains, and this is Western or European Russia. That is by far the most populous. Moscow is about 14 to 15 million, and St. Petersburg's around 7 million. So it's, a bulk of their population in the west is in those two cities. We'll go to, there are several congregations. There's Khabarovsk and Magadan over here. I don't have anything, I haven't been there, I don't know anything about them, but I do know that the Lord's Church is there. So that goes back to early 90s. I always try to give people a little bit of Russian culture because that's what the people we deal with over there were raised with. This is St. Basil's Cathedral, built in 1505. Ivan the Terrible had that built. He brought in an architect who was renowned, world-renowned, and he built that, and when he finished, had his eyes put out so he couldn't do it again. So that's how brutal this Ivan the Terrible, he was named appropriately. But this is their, I guess you'd call it their logo. If you've seen reports from reporters, they stand on a hotel right over here on the west side, on the top of that hotel, and that is all lit up over their shoulder. So that's why we come to know that this is such an iconic location. It's now a museum. It used to be a cathedral. This is the Kremlin wall. It's kind of hard to see that. It's about a little less than 2 miles all the way around. And it was built originally around old Moscow. And inside that, there are the Kremlin. This is the back of the Kremlin, which are the governmental offices. This building over here is, if you ever see the pictures of their Duma, their governmental offices like our Congress, that room is gigantic. It'll hold thousands of people. And so that's where they meet. So all the governmental things that go on in Russia start here in the Kremlin. Mr. Putin has a residence there, official residence, and of course his offices. This is Ivan's bell tower. There's 21 bells in there. One is a 70-ton giant that rings, and when it rings, then everything in the city is turned loose, and that's how they announce their festivals, whether it be governmental activity or religious activity, Russian Orthodox Church. This is the cathedral where the czars were crowned. Every time there was a change in the czars, they would crown them there. The Russian Orthodox priest, or the equivalent to the Pope, is the patriarch. And that's where they are taken care of. That's where they're crowned. So all governmental activity and religious activity starts there. Okay. These are icons. I'm sure you've seen and know about those. But they are beautiful. They're floor to ceiling, across the ceiling. They're just absolutely beautiful. And these people use them religiously. They will go to the cathedrals, light candles. They pray through one of their icons, depending on whatever their subject might be, or whatever their reason for being there. But these are just absolutely gorgeous. The apostles, Jesus himself, various religious scenes, saints that have gone, so they're very plentiful. This is a picture of, a map. And I know it's crude, but it's the best thing I could come up on to give you an idea where the Lord's Church is located in Western Russia. There are two dots here that are in Western Siberia. One of the elders in Syktyvkar has visited every one of these. And he's recruiting for the preacher training series that we have going on in Syktyvkar. And it's called a distance learning program. It's not distance learning like we know it via computer. It's more Bible correspondence effort. So we mail these out and they mail them back in. So there's 22 of those throughout Western Russia. This area right here is the hot spot. That's Donetsk. And all the Christians, as far as I know, they've all been displaced. There were a couple of schools in the area, preacher schools, that have been shut down. And all the people Christians that have left here have gone in this direction. This is Kiev. And Ukraine used to be Little Russia. And Kiev was the capital, going back to pre-1000 days, up about 1150. AD, they moved the capital to Moscow. But that was the original capital of Russia. All these red dots are churches, and these down here have all been displaced. We've even got one of the ladies and her daughter that just found out last week that she's moved all the way to Sikhtivkar and lives in one of our apartments. So it's we're doing a good thing, but it's terrible for the people that were there. A lot of the people in Sikhtivkar, which is here, this is Moscow, Vologda, Kotlas, and Sikhtivkar, and then the other congregations to the north, all the way to Vorkuta, and there's a church there made up of 14 women. No men, just women. And their summer is, it'll probably get up to 35. it's a brutal, brutal place. But they've been there, and they're older ladies, and they're very faithful. Some of the men from Sikhtivkar will ride the train 36 hours to go up there on the weekend and preach for them. And then they'll turn around and come back home on Sunday night. So it's an effort that everybody's involved in. That's part of the church in Sikhtivkar. Let's see, what else? This is St. Petersburg, Moscow, of course. This is Murmansk. Remember the movie Hunt for Red October? That's where that submarine left from. That is their naval base in the north. This is their naval base in the south, which is Crimea, and that's what Putin wanted. He wanted that back, and he took it. It's connected to Russia. This is all the southern tip of Russia. He's connected here by peninsula and to Ukraine by peninsula. He wants this whole area. This line, this red line right here, is the southern border, and Sochi, the Winter Olympics, was right there. So that kind of puts everything in a little bit of perspective as far as locations. But this is their major sea base in the south. They're protecting base for the south, and Murmansk is in the north. Okay, let's move on. Okay, we've been talking about the Russian, the social assistance home. Let's start over and kind of, this is Leningrad and this is St. Petersburg today, Moscow. I mentioned Vologda. West Main started a church there in 1995, and since then the preacher graduated from our preacher training school, and he started working with an orphanage, and they wouldn't let him have any of the children, but he could go there. So we send him $75 a month to help with supplies that he needs to work with especially the young men. And he's had a group that for the last 12 years, longer really, 15 years, that he's now teaching how to drive. So it's been a good work, and they've loved him for years, and he's been good for them. So that's in Vologda. It's about an 8-hour train ride north of Moscow. This is Kotlas. That's our very first foster home in the fall of 2000. A couple that was in school in Sikhtivkar, we were talking about this, and they wanted to go back and take some orphans from an orphanage that they used to work in. So that just worked out beautifully for all of them, and us too. Sikhtivkar is here, city of about 300,000, very education-oriented city. Have two universities, and one university and two pedagogical institutes, languages. Someone asked this morning if English was spoken. It's spoken pretty widely because that's English, German, and French, along with Russian. Now, those are the languages that their children learn from very early ages. So it's been very important to me, especially, to have friends that could at least converse in those one words we were talking about. Then the cities to the north, all the way up to Vorkuta, there it is. Up past the Arctic Circle. Okay, let's move. This was our scripture reading tonight. Go teach, baptize, and teach. That's what the objective, what the plan was from the very get-go. And this was the verse that we used to ride on, so to speak. And it works. It has worked every time. These gentlemen are elder in Sikhtivkar, same. This is the elder that's traveled to all those places and knows about all those churches. This is Marlon Rutherford, who is a dear friend. He lives just outside Decatur, and he goes, and his effort is more in campaigns. He loves to go to these villages outside Sikhtivkar and preach for a week or two, and if baptisms come, fine. If they don't, they find another village. So it's just, that's what he loves, and he does it regularly. This gentleman is James Taylor, our deacon, that takes care of the financial work for Russia, transferring funds and so forth. So those are the people that kind of helped me over there, along with the elders at West Main. The property that we have 10 apartments, and all the assets are owned by a foundation which was created by the eldership in Syktyvkar. And this foundation is responsible for the assets of the homes, for the school, and for the church. And this is, I guess, the only thing I can think it parallels with would be churches that become incorporated for whatever legal reasons there might be. But it's a good thing for us, because on the board of directors are the two elders and James Taylor, myself, all four elders at West Main. That's the board of directors, or the board of trustees, on this document that has everything registered. Okay, quickly. These two ladies are they're the wheels that make it go. Both of them are named Tatiana. And if you ever catch yourself standing between two Tatianas, you get to make a wish. I was in the wrong place. But they are absolutely wonderful. They are tireless. This lady right here is everybody's grandmother. She's on call 24/7 and has been for 15 years, and loves it, and she loves the kids. They love her. So if she can help, she's there. Wonderful ladies. These four children are two sets of brother and sister. They came to us from obviously an orphanage, and the family that is keeping them, the husband and wife, were students at the school. And the mother, Valentina, was raised in a family. Her mother kept as many as 15 foster children when she was growing up, so she's familiar with this kind of work. And they're considering now adding more children to their family. This is Dima. He's the last one, that last foster child we got. The lady that was standing in the middle, of Tatiana, that's her new foster son. Came to us in October of last year. Okay, that's Dima again, playing with a couple of his buddies. This couple is, he's a deacon. His wife works with disabled children, and they are seriously considering taking foster children. They have two sons, and they're willing to take more. They are currently, how many of you remember the World Book Encyclopedia? Yeah, we're of age. If you go look up Russia, you'll see some pictures of early Russian families. You know, six or eight, grandmother, mother, father, children, sitting around a kitchen table. And they all live in this one or two room apartment. They live in two rooms with two boys. They share a bathroom and a kitchen with everybody else on this floor in this dormitory. But they want these children. And I have indicated that I would help them some way or other to accomplish that, because that's kind of what we wanted to do, is increase our number of kids, because it has become a fertile field. And I'll talk some more about that in a few minutes. His name is Misha, and her name is Katya. That's Syktyvkar's church building, by the way, the front of it. Then the basement, this is chasing a rabbit here. In the basement, they have books that have been written by authors in the United States. Burton Kaufman is one of the leading inventories that they carry, commentaries. The basement is absolutely full, floor to ceiling, of books. They are written, translated, printed, and published in Russian, and they send them to the church in Syktyvkar. And there's in the end of this building right down here, there's a door with one of those roller things, and they'll bring these books and slide them down that roller and stack them in that basement. And then they take orders from churches all over Russia, Siberia as well. take them to the train station, ship them to these churches, and it's all free. So it's been a wonderful thing for them, and it keeps them busy. These are our teenagers, lovely, beautiful, wonderful bunch of kids. I can't get that Alabama sweatshirt off of him for anything. I think he does it just to aggravate me. But he is an absolute jewel. He's been with us since he was six. He's 22 now, and he is working full-time as a missionary, supported by that guy in the white shirt a while ago, Marlon Rutherford. And he goes and he works with the church in Majada and one in Visiga. These are all, this is one of our foster children. This one, this is an elder's daughter. Foster. So you can kind of get an idea of how important our kids are to the teenage group and how important they all are together. And we've had three summer camps, and each one of them has gotten bigger and better every year. And they love each other, and they take care of each other. And, you know, a lot of us grew up going to Christian camp when we were teenagers, and we remember people we met from way back then. And they're building that same relationship now, so it's been good for them. This is a preacher's home. This is Paul. He is one of the translators at the school, and he's working with Gennady and will eventually become the director of efforts over there with the distance learning program. He's very affluent in English, and just a very knowledgeable young man, been helpful in translating the material that's written for that distance learning program. Two of our foster boys right here. Okay, there he is. This was our devotional one late one Sunday afternoon. This is the preacher's wife, Vika, and this is our tomb. They have since had a little girl. So this was in January. Just a great time to be with the kids. Going back to this is Sasha. He was six or seven at the time. I've kind of lost track. But we have always had classes for the kids. And in the early days, it was just Christian little children's songs that are in Russian. They're beautiful, just like ours are. But they get together and they talk about Bible and they sing, and he's learning to sing and lead the singing. And this is him today. He's 19. He will go into the service in January, be gone for at least, I think it's a year. So I tried to get him to, if he'd cut that finger off, they'd turn him down. But I don't know if I'll be able to swing that or not. But he's working part-time with Marlon in the work with some of the churches over there. And this is his foster brother, Vladik, and Vladik was baptized in March or April. And Sasha's been a Christian for a long time. This is Daniel, and this is his family. Valentina had at one time six foster children and one natural. This is her natural daughter, and she's 16 now. But she had at least six foster children, and one of those was our first disaster, I guess you'd say. He was killed on a motorcycle accident many years ago. So that was really heart-wrenching. But this is the young lady, Irina. This is Nikita, and this is Daniel. He was baptized in June while I was there. I was glad to be a part of that. This is Sunday afternoon Sunday noon after worship. They gather, two or three of them, at least two of them will head for Majada, which is an hour and a half away, and they have church service there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they come back home. And I was there, so Paul was going to be the translator for me, and these two guys are conducting the service, the prayers and the song leading and the Lord's Supper and the things that we need to do. And this lady she's a taxi driver, and when all the vehicles are busy, she's available, and we rode with her that afternoon. These are the first two ladies. This goes back to the spring of 2000. They were the first two that that came to live with us. They're both still faithful, but they live in their own apartment now. And that's one of the beautiful things about this. We don't have any permanent residents. They all want to get out, back out on their own. They're thankful for the help while they're there, and they love it, love you. And I say, I know I don't know them, but I know that they help me, and I am thankful for that. So that's the kind of generosity that you make possible. I've tried to describe that, and it's impossible for me to do, and I've told Roy it's kind of like trying to describe how a banana tastes. You can't do it. You just got to eat one. And that's the only way you'll know. And that's what it's like. If any of you want to go, I'll show you what I'm talking about. And this is, I've come to describe this as a field white unto harvest. You know the scripture? Jesus talking about go out into the world, the fields are white. That field is white, has been. They're just about, well, of all the ones there, this was in January, there's four in that picture that had not been converted. And today, that's the only one and she's indicated she wants to, but there's some things that they need to talk about with her first. So, but that group of ladies is, we started off in a weekly Bible study in Matthew, verse at a time. You remember? Read a verse, talk about it. Read second verse, talk about it. Just one right after another. And that's how a lot of us learn scripture. And it works for them too. We went through Matthew, went through Mark, started Luke, and one of them said, we've already studied this. And then they came to realize that it's not four gospels, plural. There's four accounts of one. So they decided they'd move over into Acts. And if you've ever seen the light come on in somebody's eyes and their face light up when they understand or realize something, that's what you see when you're talking there. When we get to the church and the baptism and what Peter told them on the day of Pentecost, and you explain to them about the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Christ, and that's what we go through, the death, burial, and resurrection. And that was, when they realized that, oh, I understand. And it wasn't just within a month, three of them became Christians. So it's a matter of a learning process, and don't ever stop learning. You will never learn it all. You know, the four gospel accounts teach us about Jesus. Then we get to Acts and we find out about the church. And then from Romans on, we learn what to do about it. And that is a lot of material. And we will never learn it all, and it's always a process. But that's a loving, tender group right there. These two ladies I mentioned they want to move on. The one on, they're both named Ira. I don't know what it is about all of our people are either named Tatiana, Ira, or something easy anyway. That's helpful to me. But the one on the right has been with us for about 3 years, and in July she made arrangements for her own apartment and she moved out. She'd been a Christian at least 2 years, maybe longer. The Ira on the left was wanting to do the same thing, but there was something about the financial arrangements that she had worked out for her apartment that kind of fell through. So she's still with us, but intending to move on. They all want to do that. They don't want to continue on a permanent basis. So that's one of the blessings that we have in dealing with them. I mentioned in June, I was there to help them with a family seminar, family relationships. And this was a poster they made. They made some little 3x5 cards, same information, same format. And the teenagers took them downtown to the busy intersection downtown. And they gave out 900 of those in an hour. And it's one of those intersections where the lights all turn red and the people just go all directions. And then the lights blinking and everybody gets there and they stop and then the cars get a chance. But that was a busy, busy intersection, especially on a Saturday. This was a morning session. There was about anywhere from 17 to 19 there in the morning. And then in the evening, there was as many as 49. And the elders were extremely delighted about the attendance. There were some visitors there on two occasions that from the community. and had been that had seen our advertisements, and it was a joy to them to be able to talk with them. Since December of 1999, we've established a total of 15 homes, 6 social assistance homes, and 9 foster homes. The social assistance homes are made up of widows, destitute women, or women that are maybe they're pregnant, they don't have any place to go, they've been kicked out of their homes, whatever the reason might be. And if they find us or we find them, then we tell them who we are and what we are. We tell them that there's some rules that they have to go by, you know, no men and so forth and so on. And when they agree to that, we make sure they understand that they're invited to go to church. They're invited to go to that Bible study. And we have ladies that will keep them in a kindergarten or a daycare center while they're studying the Bible or while they're learning other things, and like school. And some of them will want to go back to school. Some of them don't have any documentation. We work with them on that, registering them and their children. So it's a wonderful service we do for them. And eventually, they become a part of not only the church and the worship, but also the Bible studies on Monday night. And those are the fun things. I meant to tell you that 6 social assistance homes, that kind of fluctuates. Depends on how many women that we have. We own 6 and we rent 5. Sometimes it's 3, sometimes it's 5. So that number fluctuate depending on the number of women that we have in that situation. 24 right now, 19 women and 5 children. We've also provided housing for 178 women and children. What that means is they came in, we helped them spiritually, physically, and then they were like era, moved on to better things maybe. So that's where that comes from, the number. Foster homes, 38 adults and children, 11 parents and 27 children. 2 full-time, 2 part-time employees. Total of 244 lives been affected by our efforts. We got 60 contributors last year, both churches and individuals. And people ask, well, why are you, our budget's running about $5,500 a month. Why do you spend that kind of money over there? Why don't we do it here? You cannot take care of 65 women and children for $5,500 a month. I don't care where you are in this country, it won't happen. But over there, you can do that. And you have an opportunity to teach someone who's never been a part of any religion or been a part of one that only requires them to be there when they're born, when they're married, and when they die. That's the requirement from a Russian Orthodox. Today, 43 have become Christians, 29 adults and 14 of our young people. And this is the kindergarten daycare. And they keep the small children that are pre-kindergarten age. You know, the other Tatiana, she and one of our girls that Nastya is her name, they'll babysit anybody and everybody that needs to be kept while people are studying the Bible. So it is, it's a good working machine, and they've done it. They know how to do that. Go teach, baptize, and teach. That's the criteria we all live by, or should be. This is the slide I wanted you to remember. When we were talking about the languages and the things that we learn that are, we think are important, but they're really not. But we have been blessed with the blessing to be able to talk. And that sounds trite or maybe, I don't know what the word might be, but it sounds like we take it for granted, and I know we do. We just get up, we start talking, we go to bed, and we talk till we go to sleep sometimes. But that is a blessing that we have as a result of our English. I've sat here in your auditorium and watched your sign language class as it works through the worship service and the song service. There are people who study Braille and for the blind, and that's a wonderful thing. But you and I have the ability to talk, and that is one of the most common useful blessings that we absolutely have. That picture, there are, maybe I can show you, there's six. I took the picture in September of 93. That was my first trip, and I was snapping pictures like you wouldn't believe. Everything that moved or looked interesting, I took a picture of it. And the one that I was interested in was this building right here. That's the top of one of their train stations. They have four major train stations in Moscow, one going north, south, east, and west. And that was what I was interested in. But later I was looking at that picture, and I realized that there's one, two, three, four, five, six apartment buildings. Those apartment buildings are 25 stories high. They have eight doors down one side, entry, eight doors down the back side, so that's 16 doors. Each door goes 25 floors, and there's three apartments on each floor. And if you start counting all that up and assume that there's four to a family, there's almost 30,000 people in those six buildings. That's almost as much as lives in Tupelo, Mississippi. And I'm talking about even the metropolitan area of Tupelo, Mississippi. But how many times have we been privileged and blessed to hear the Lord's invitation extended? If you've been faithful Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, not counting meetings or gospel meetings or anything, but you've heard 156 invitations of the Lord for the gospel in the last year. And we take that for granted just like we do talking. We have an obligation. When Jesus told the disciples to go and teach and baptize and teach, he was talking to you and me, because we can read that same scripture. We have the ability to talk, and we have the fields that are wide unto harvest are all around us, and we have an obligation and a responsibility to take that gospel to whoever we can get it to. They can understand English, and we can speak English, then that's an opportunity. I encourage you to do that. If you haven't been, please do. Please change and make yourself aware of what needs to be. Now, I realize that there's one, two, three, four, five doors, six doors out of this auditorium, and you may be sitting there right now thinking, okay, he's got a point. I think I'm gonna try. When you walk through those doors, there's probably a metal frame there, and it will suck all the good intentions you just gained right out of your heart. So don't let it do that. I mean, keep it and work on it tomorrow and the next day, and make it a part of your life. If you're here and need to respond to the gospel of Christ, it's open and available to you. This is the best time you've ever had. If you're here and you need to make correction in your life, then this is also the best time you've ever had. If you need to come while we stand and sing, please do.